network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tamaro Iannacre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy morning show for you today. We'll hear about food insecurity in Catskill from Neva Wartell, who heads up one of the food banks in Catskill, helping people with hunger needs. We'll also hear from the local Democratic Socialist, their new show on WGXC. They spoke about the housing issue. Affordable housing is lacking throughout New York State and definitely in the Hudson Valley, and they addressed that issue with an activist from Saratoga County. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Turns the blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through.
Listening to 90.7 FM
WGXC Acra.
Wave Farms Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Acre broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farms Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Chris Anderson of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tamaro Iannacre with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, September 12th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Mid-Hudson News reports that Dutchess County legislators voted to keep burning trash. The vote was 17-7, with Republicans voting for burning trash and Democrats voting against. Dutchess County currently burns 45% of its solid waste, hundreds of tons of trash. The county recycles 36% of its waste. David Heller of Rhinebeck, one of the speakers against the plan at a public hearing, called the legislator a group of, quote, illiterate pyromaniacs, unquote. And Minority Leader Yvette Valdez-Smith said, quote, we are better than this, unquote. But Democrat legislator Randy Johnson, who missed the meeting, said he would have joined Republicans voting for the plan. Johnson said, quote, burning trash is not a bad idea. The EPA monitors the emissions at the burning facility, and so far this is the most efficient way to get rid of trash, unquote. Read more about the story in Mid-Hudson News. Robert Gavin reports in the Times Union that an investigation by the court system's inspector general found two Rensselaer County family court judges and four other staffers had created a hostile work environment, and that the six had conspired to, quote, bully, harass, demean, and intimidate an employee. And judges Elizabeth Walsh and Jill Ken took down and told the complainant that an effort to display posters to promote inclusion was, quote, offensive, unquote, as well as, quote, passive-aggressive, juvenile, and completely unprofessional, unquote. Clerical assistants in the family court building in Troy put up the posters to brighten up the court. They had messages that said, quote, everyone is welcome here. Be the change you want to see in the world. All are welcome, important, encouraged, and loved here. And, quote, be the reason someone smiles today, unquote. Walsh, the judge who took the posters off the walls, said, quote, while I appreciate the thought behind them, they had the opposite effect on most of the folks who work very hard each and every day here in service to the families of our county, unquote. The complainant told Walsh, quote, I'm afraid I just don't see how any of those messages can be construed as offensive, unquote. Walsh has a plaque on her own judicial bench that says, quote, always be kinder than necessary, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. The Troy Record reports that New York State Attorney General Letitia James will be hosting a public hearing about the proposed closure of the Burdett Birthing Center on Monday, September 18th from 1 to 5 p.m. and from 6 to 8 p.m. at Bush Memorial Center at Russell Sage College, 61st Street in Troy. If the center closes, there will not be any birthing locations in Rensselaer County, and there are already no birthing centers in Greene and Columbia counties. Columbia Memorial in Hudson stopped birthing services in 2019. The Troy-based birthing center in Samaritan Hospital brought 881 infants into the world last year, and as of May, 320 infants this year. James said in a press release, quote, as the only maternal unit in Rensselaer County, the Burdett Birth Center is an integral part of the local community and the entire region for essential health care. The prospect of this center closing is deeply concerning, as it would greatly affect communities throughout the capital region and beyond, unquote. Hospital officials cite financial concerns when explaining why they want to close the center. Read more about the story in the Troy Record. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, September 12th. Local early morning temperatures range from 60 degrees in Tannersville to 64 in Stephentown. Regional average soil temperature is 71 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low. This morning, some of us could run into fog on the way into work. Otherwise, it will be a clear, mostly sunny day with a high of 71 at 3 p.m. Dew points come down a bit, so it shouldn't feel quite as humid. Overnight, temperatures dip to 51 degrees. Then we get a nice-looking Friday with a high of 71. Overnight, it's 53 comfy degrees, taking us into a weekend that is looking very much the same. Dry, comfortable, with highs in the 70s. And that's pretty much it. The days are going to stop being above 80 degrees. Pollen levels have bottomed out. That's it. The signature of fall has arrived to the northeast. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1:57 a.m., low tide at 8:34 a.m., high tide again at 2:27 p.m., and low tide once again at 8:35 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 77 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 6:59 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:28 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances have risen to 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 371 kilometers per second, with an average density of 9 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 173, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. And, well, you're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
Neva Wartell, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me. I remember working in Hudson years ago on Allen Street and 3rd Street, working on construction jobs. And twice a week, I think it was, there was a Ukrainian guy, Igor, actually. He would be in line too. The Salvation Army right there on 3rd Street, I mean, you'd have this line just around the block, like first thing in the morning.
Yeah,
I was always, it was always just so old folks, maybe some disabled folks, just a whole mix of different kinds of people with their little carts. And I'm like, oh my God, these are people who need food, like literally just who need this extra little boost during the week for a couple loaves of bread, some cans of beans, whatever it may be, to get through another week. And it always just blew my mind. Now you're over there in Greene County, which statistically I believe has Columbia County beat as the one of the most impoverished counties in New York State, if not the poorest, however they measure that county in New York State. So what's it like over in Catskill right now on that front?
Well, so actually we are no longer one of the considered one of the most impoverished. I mean, they gauge by, I guess, you know, the average income of the population. We've had a lot of people with a lot of money coming in. And so that changes the balance, and that changes how, you know, the category, I guess you could say, of Greene County in terms of average income. So we're not technically one of the poorest counties, but in reality, we most certainly are. And like, just as you were saying that Columbia County, there's a lot of agricultural activity, not so much here, not so much in Greene County. There's a lot of very viable land, farmland that should be being used. Farmers, family farms should be supported, and they're not being supported by local government. So we're in big trouble. You know, we have to get our food from, as a food bank, we get our primary source is the regional food bank, which our regional, the Northeastern New York region, which is in Albany. We also have partnerships with several local farms, several gleaning organizations, well, two particular gleaning organizations. But the farms themselves really need the support. And I mean, you can also tell by the prices at the farm markets. When people go to the green market, you're paying a lot of money for vegetables, because, you know, a lot of the people who come here, they'll get a piece of land, they'll set up a farming situation, but they can't farm at the scale that that is really needed to feed people. So the whole thing is not only about access to food, but access to healthy food, access to fresh food, access to nutritious food. And that goes hand in hand. A food insecurity goes hand in hand with housing insecurity, lack of access to quality health care, especially mental health services, because when you're struggling to keep a roof over your head and you're struggling to keep yourself and your family fed, that can really mess you up in your mind. You know, that can really create or trigger mental health issues. And, you know, everything is everything. Everything is related, interrelated. And we're dealing with a multi-level crisis here. And again, it's not just here. The situation is everywhere because, you know, big agriculture controls the land. And you know, Kieran, the whole issue always is who controls the land, who controls the means of production, right? And yeah. And who has the access to services and goods that are necessary for survival. So that's what's at the root of the Catskill Food Pantry. Catskill Food Pantry was founded in 2020 by Megan Henry, who was a Catskill resident and at the time was working at the Catskill Community Center, which no longer exists. But in response to the COVID situation and the lockdown at the time in 2020, she created the Catskill Food Pantry so that, you know, people could continue to have access to quality, healthy food in a situation where, you know, they couldn't necessarily even get out of the house or weren't going to go to the supermarket and be in that kind of an environment given the COVID situation. Then in 2021, early 2021, when the community center was closing down, Megan moved the pantry to St. Luke's Episcopal Church on William Street, where we are still to this day. The church has been amazing, absolutely amazing. in terms of hosting us, letting us, expand into a space that was previously a daycare center, but again, shut down because of COVID. And we've filled that space to capacity. When the pantry first moved into St. Luke's Church, there were more or less the same 25 families, average of 25 families or households coming through every week. And, a small handful of deliveries that people would call and say, I can't come to the pantry. Can you please help me out with an emergency food delivery, that kind of thing. Now we have over 100 between walk-ins every single week. We have an average of 35 deliveries. We have 5 different delivery routes, which require volunteers, drivers, packers. We have an amazing cadre of volunteers who help out at the pantry. And if it weren't for them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. But we focus on fresh produce, dairy, proteins, variety of different kinds of meats, seafood, and then staple items, rice, beans, pasta, juice, things like that, shelf stable items, cereal, the basics. But the other thing that distinguishes us is that we are what's called a client choice pantry, which means that we have it set up like a grocery store, and people come in and they bring their own bags. If they don't have their bags, we can give them bags, but they do their own shopping. Whereas in the general method of a food pantry is you come in, you tell them how many people in your household, and they give you a few days worth of food in a bag or a box, and you take it away. At the Catskill Food Pantry, people do their own shopping because they know what they eat, they know what they prefer, and it's not a handout. It's more of a sharing experience. And we all enjoy it, actually. We enjoy each other. There's a lot of good conversation that goes on, a lot of sharing of ideas, a lot of sharing of recipes. What do you do with this? This is an interesting thing. What is this? What kind of vegetable is this? And people talk about it and like, oh, well, I cook it this way and I cook it that way. And, oh, that's really interesting. I think I'll take it home and try it. So there are a number of other things that go on at the pantry, differences between Catskill Food Pantry and your average food pantry. But I think that's a good example right there.
Well, it sounds like a lot of activity, and it sounds positive on the one hand, but on the other hand, I just am absolutely continue to be in my short lifetime here appalled at the richest, most wealthiest nation on earth that boasts all these great things has such a brutal kind of violence of poverty that exists in healthcare and in food insecurity, to use that more recent term. And it's unbelievable right here in our midst, where we have literally almost billionaires, if not multimillionaires, moving now full time into our communities, in Kingston, Berkshire County. We have a high concentration over here of people that are now full time since COVID. I mean,
right.
That class is doing really great, and I don't see any kind of improvement. If not, as a matter of fact, I see, like, in your line of work, maybe you could tell me your experience, things almost getting worse. You say over 100 per week, and this is just at St. Luke's. Now, you and I also wanted to clarify the second question to tag on to that. Sorry to add, is you mentioned there's five locations in Cass Hill, not just the one. There's actually five, so could clarify that. And just the first one is a more general question of, are things actually seeming to be worse?
Of course things are worse. And it's directly related to, you know, the ongoing gentrification of the whole region. You know, Catskill was, quote, discovered during COVID. And that's when, I mean, that's when things really started going out of proportion. And, you know, people, there, you know, that we have all kinds of things happening, like the Farm Bill. The 2023 Farm Bill is coming up for vote. And that's an extreme, that's a crucial, crucial bill that people need to be aware of. And our District 19 Representative Mark Molinaro is on the Committee on Agriculture, and his vote is going to have a direct major impact on what's in the Farm Bill and whether or not it passes. And actually, we're at the pantry working on putting together a public presentation about the Farm Bill and why people need to know about it and why people need to be involved in organizing around it, because it is pays for federal nutrition programs like SNAP and TFAP, which is the Emergency Food Assistance Program. These are the USDA programs that that make it possible for food banks to exist. The regional food bank is funded by these programs, and they give grants to food pantries like ours, and they supply us with the food, the majority of the food, that then we make accessible to our community, to our neighbors.
Okay, well, that's awesome. And once again, your show on WGXC, it's Sundays from 1 to 3 p.m., Music for the Masses, and Carlene Murphy, mostly Haitian music, Carlene Murphy holding it down at WGXC with her awesome show, Lile Le Ten.
Yeah, that's the Haitian the Sunday afternoon show, and Haitian news and events and culture, and but we'll both be changing it up, because we're going to be broadcasting live from the festival, so there'll be music there. There'll be a lot of cultural things going on. We'll be interviewing people who are responsible for putting the festival together, as well as local people who are just attending the festival. And that's this Sunday from 1 to 6. We'll be down at Waterfront Park. So if you happen to be down there at and enjoying the festival, and it's a really, really wonderful event. I mean, it's really, everybody's got their flags and their colors and their culture, you know, and food and music, and it's a humanity affirming event, I find, and I'm really excited that we're going to be broadcasting live right here on WGXC.
All right, tune in, folks, or get down to the Waterfront Park to check out the Latinx Festival in Hudson this Sunday, 1 o'clock, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, there's a parade that starts at 7th Street Park at noon.
Oh, okay.
And the parade goes down to Waterfront Park, and then the festival begins. We will be there.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, such a tiny little upstate community in some regards, but in other ways, like, it's also such an amazing example of diversity and, you know, people of color living upstate in the middle of kind of nowhere in Columbia and Greene counties. I mean, it's there's culture up here, you know. It's not just white farmers up here in upstate New York, you know. We have a long history of people of color, you know, abiding in our communities. So
I do want to also mention that the festival is organized by the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, which is a really, really important organization and deserves the recognition and support of our entire community. They're doing really, really amazing work that that's necessary, and they step up and they do the work, and it's just a wonderful organization. And then, you know, a big part of it is having fun. So when you have a festival like this, it's an opportunity for people to join together and in solidarity and support CCSM and support our various cultural communities in the region.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I appreciate is just the basic sort of tagline of some of the work that Columbia County Sanctuary Movement does is securing basic dignity and human rights for just people that are hardworking in our communities. And I've contacted them on more than one occasion to help with situation involving certain entities that were threatening to violate the rights and dignity of coworkers and friends of mine, and been quite successful at doing so, as a matter of fact, in many cases. So
yeah, they do the work.
Yep.
They do.
Yep. Awesome. Well, Neela, thank you so much.
Here is brand new music from Food Man from Japan. His 2021 album, Yasuregi Land, is out. And this is Food Court from Food Man.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Passport now, McCarthy! Passport now, McCarthy! Conservatives staged a sit-in at Speaker Kevin McCarthy's office Monday, accusing House Republicans of playing politics with the lives of those hit by HIV and AIDS. McCarthy faces pressure from his caucus on government funding, and some Republicans oppose PEPFAR, saying it promotes abortion abroad. The International AIDS Relief Program is set to expire at the end of the month. The George W. Bush Library credits it with saving 25 million lives, mostly in southern Africa. Democratic Alabama Representative Terry Sewell is hailing a federal court move reaffirming that the state's latest congressional map is still unfair.
We want to make sure that irrespective of your race or your zip code, that every voter has an equal opportunity for their voice to be heard in this democracy.
Several federal courts, most recently yesterday, have ruled the congressional maps drawn by the state of Alabama violate the Voting Rights Act by diluting black votes. A new system called Eagle AI is being promoted by election deniers, including MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, as an open-to-the-public AI vote integrity tool. It's an alternative to the ERIC system run by state election officials. Both check voter registration rolls, but opponents say the new tool could be abused and flood election workers with false reports of fraud. Republicans in Wisconsin Senate's Elections Committee took the first steps to oust Election Administrator Megan Wolf. Wolf has resisted claims by former President Donald Trump about Wisconsin's elections. Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says Democrats shouldn't avoid the democratic process over her possible replacement.
At the end of the day, if for some reason Megan Wolf isn't confirmed, somebody else will step up, we'll still have secure elections, and we'll be able to have an election that we can all have confidence in.
Bernalillo County Sheriff John Allen says he won't enforce Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's emergency order suspending the right to carry firearms in public in Albuquerque for 30 days.
I'm a law enforcement professional. This order will not do anything to curb gun violence other than punish law-abiding citizens from their constitutional right to self-defense.
The National Association for Gun Rights is suing to stop the order, arguing it violates a 2022 Supreme Court ruling in a New York case. Grisham says she welcomes the debate about how to make New Mexicans safer.
If we send a very clear and strong message that what's happening in our state, and particularly today in the largest city, is unacceptable, we believe that we create safer situations.
The Food and Drug Administration has approved a new COVID booster, and the CDC is expected to issue guidance for a national rollout to start as soon as this week. That could put the booster on a schedule similar to the seasonal flu shot. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In May, the MIT Election Data and Science Lab released its survey of the performance of American elections for the 2022 midterms. A majority of both in-person and mail-in voters expressed satisfaction with the voting process, but how voters voted shifted again from 2020 to 2022. MIT surveyed 200 voters in each state and D.C. on methods of voting, problems encountered, confidence that votes were counted, election security, and reasons for not voting. Compared with 2020, confidence that the voters' vote counted as intended went up in 2022, particularly among Republicans. Of those who voted in person on Election Day, 68% were very confident, with 24% somewhat confident. Interestingly, of those who voted by mail, 73% were very confident and 21% somewhat confident. In-person voting on Election Day 2022 rebounded 19% from 2020 to 50% of voters, while voting by mail dropped to 31%. The percentage of early in-person voting, while down from 2020's pandemic voting, continues to climb over time, reaching 18% in 2022. Among those who didn't vote in the midterm, 12.1% cited not knowing enough about the candidates, 11.7% because they weren't interested, and 9.8% because they were too busy. Find the link to the full report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
We will hear from one of the Capital District DSA's own, Hannah, to discuss housing. At the time of recording this interview, we recorded it last week on the morning of August 30th, literally a week ago today. And we briefly touched on the Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition's own rental situation. We didn't get into the nitty-gritty of it, as we didn't have a ton of information on it. However, Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition Director of Operations Elliot spoke to Columbia Green Media and is quoted on the WGXC website. His statement is poignant and speaks to the larger issues of housing in Columbia and Green counties, which we discuss on a more macro scale with Hannah, as who is an organizer in Saratoga. Next time we dive deeper into the issue, because there will absolutely be a next time on this, we would love to have Elliot join us and speak more directly on the Columbia Green issues.
And there's just one other thing to note. This is the initial shakedown cruise for this radio show, as I think you probably can tell. And housing is a very crucial issue. So there may be technical difficulties, because after all, radio is, at least to me, and I'm pretty sure to Casey, kind of magical, and we're apprentice musicians. And so with that, we're going to bring into the studio, remotely, Hannah.
Via Zoom.
Here we go.
So now we're back for the talk part of the show, and our guest tonight is Hannah of the Capitol. So now we're back for the talk part of the show, and our guest tonight is Hannah of the Capital District Democratic Socialists of America, who's also part of its housing committee. Hannah, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well tonight. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. I love working with Bill and Casey, so.
Likewise. How did you get involved in Democratic Socialists of America? Tell us from the outset. I remember I saw you once at, I met you first at a march in Albany.
So when I first signed up, I actually appeared at an electoral meeting, and I was like, oh, this will be fun. Like, we'll just, you know, talk about things, like maybe more gossipy. And I was like blown away by how prepared everybody was and how much was going on. I remember I took like 8 pages of notes, and that was my kind of intro in finding my way around. But I was really motivated to join. And I got interested in politics from just living in Saratoga. Actually, I'm a resident of Saratoga, the city of Saratoga Springs. And at the time, I was actually working at a marketing firm, which is kind of ironic now. But I would walk by every day, and there was an unhoused encampment there that, and it really upset me. I think housing is something I've always connected with when I was younger. It always just felt like someone should be doing something about that when I was younger. And when I was walking to work, it dawned on me that maybe I should be doing something about it. So I started kind of looking into just what's going on with housing, like why is this happening? What are the safety nets that we have available? And I was pretty disappointed by what we have and kind of a lot of the mainstream options for housing and kind of solutions as well from both of the political parties, the two solutions that are put about the unhoused. So that made me more interested in an ideology such as being a democratic socialist. So I started exploring that and I found, oh, this is exactly kind of how I've always grounded myself. I felt like I was politically kind of didn't have a home myself beforehand. And then I found myself agreeing with every single thing I read. And I was like, okay, this is the thing for me. And since joining, we started the housing committee, I think it was in March of 2022 now. And it's really been like honestly a life-changing experience. I've met so many great people. I got to work with our city there. I get to continue to stay in this area. I chose to stay in the city because of the work that we've done here and the progress that we've made in Saratoga Springs. And I really want to see it through to the end. But yeah, that's a little background.
Can you elaborate a little bit on like the specific work you've been doing within Saratoga Springs?
Yeah, so I was through my advocacy with DSA. We did a lot of showing up at public comment. It kind of all started because I started volunteering with the group Saratoga Stronger, which I was introduced to through DSA, of course. And they had the radical approach of going up and bringing food to the unhoused where they were, instead of, we have some food services where you have to go to church to receive a meal, you have to be staying in the shelter.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films,
which don't really account for everybody, especially don't account for that we have way more people than we have beds and shelters up here. So that approach, we were surveying around, we were serving in a city block at one point, and we were asked to move because people felt that us serving one meal a week was encouraging people to stay homeless, which was obviously infuriating because they're like, we provide one warm meal a week. We try to build friendships while we're there, build trust. If they ask us about how to get a job or how to get an apartment, we're there to fill everything out. But yeah, people saw that as destructive, so we were asked to leave that property. Through that, we had the workaround of, okay, we'll just go straight to the encampment, which at the time was at the Woodlawn parking garage. So we would set up our table there. And, you know, there was, obviously, there's still people that are like, oh, you're encouraging them to stay out there. The one warm meal a week is worth sleeping seven nights on the street to wait for, apparently.
So let me ask you, do they make those same kind of criticisms of, let's say, churches that you go into to get a meal, or let's say food pantries and stuff like that?
No, so that was actually something I brought up. Where we were originally located was near a Salvation Army and a Stewart's as well that the population frequented there. So part of my argument was, well, are you going to ask them to move? Because it was a really big issue in Saratoga amongst the politicians and some of the residents here that there was an encampment on Woodlawn. They said that it was scaring them. They were uncomfortable with it. So there was a lot of backlash to those people and just kind of a mentality of, we just need to get rid of them instead of we need to help them. So a lot of the work has primarily focused around trying to transform that viewpoint. Kind of after we had the battle about where to serve food, there was an aggressive panhandling law that or ordinance that was introduced up in Saratoga. So we went to work organizing. I think we really took a lead there in organizing amongst our housing committee and with our allies that are up here to get people to turn out. We just did a pretty sizable public comment, I would say. We did public comment for a few weeks, just trying to flood it as much as we can with people pointing out how, first of all, panhandling is protected by the Second Amendment, as well as other things like that it criminalizes homelessness. And we made sure to really drive home the point of right now you're criminalizing homelessness. Instead, we really want to see you try to improve these people. So from there, the panhandling ordinance was not passed in Saratoga, which was really great. I was very happy to see that defeated. We did a lot of work on that. And then right from there, the city was a little more open to a low barrier shelter method. So that was where we stepped in. It's a very long story, but there were plans to have a shelter up at it was on William Street, but it was located close to Spa Catholic, located up in Saratoga. So there was a lot of pushback from parents, but we worked around that. The original shelter holder was kind of scared off by the pushback and pulled out. So in response to that, and all credit to City Council for doing this, the mayor and the rest of City Council very quickly pulled together a city task force, and my name was put on that list. I was asked to be on it, and I was very excited to work on it. There were a few other housing advocates, as well as some other familiar faces in the area that really know more about the real estate side or more about the community, maybe someone that specializes in housing advocacy. And it was a really, you know, it's a really good process so far. It has almost wrapped up. We are ready to send our recommendations to City Council, and I'm excited we're going to be presenting that at an upcoming meeting to all of them. Thank you.
From Japan, that was Food Man with the track Edgy Fly from the 2021 album Yasarigi Land on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that on September 11th, State Supreme Court Justice Thomas Marcel ruled that New York's new Independent Ethics Commission violates the state constitution because it was formed without a constitutional amendment. Marcel also said the Ethics Commission wrongly takes authority from the governor and improperly administers and enforces ethic laws that are, and I quote, the exercise of executive power belonging to the executive branch, end quote. The ruling came in a case from former Governor Andrew Cuomo, who wants to stop the Ethics Commission's efforts to investigate a $5 million deal that he received for writing a book about his administration's handling of the pandemic. The investigation into whether Cuomo unethically used government staffers to work on his book rather than taxpayer business. Marcel wrote, and I quote, "Our Constitution, which so carefully allocates power among the three branches, will not permit those powers to be transferred to an independent commission amounting to an unsanctioned fourth branch of government. The government belongs to the people of the state of New York. They established it, and only they can alter it. If the people should choose to be governed by those who are not politically accountable to them or their governor, who swear no oath or allegiance to them, and who come as a class composed of urban academics and who are not reflective of the cross-section of the people whom they govern, the people may do so. But it is for the people to decide, and only the people. Here, the legislature has done by statute what was required to be done by constitutional amendment," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Paul Kirby reports for the Daily Freeman that after proposing only online hearings, the Public Service Commission will now hold in-person meetings about Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corp's proposed double-digit electricity and gas delivery rate increases. Previously, four virtual and telephone hearings were announced for this month, but now a press release from the commission says the in-person public hearings would be held at a later date, but gave no specific details. Local politicians such as Assemblymember D.D. Barrett and State Senator Michelle Henchy have called for in-person meetings. Barrett said, and I quote, "Ratepayers in the Hudson Valley have faced sky-high utility bills in recent years, bills that were only exacerbated by the flawed rollout of Central Hudson's new billing system that left many of my constituents having to decide whether to pay their electricity bill or put food on the table. Given the significant rate increase requested by Central Hudson, it is more important than ever to have an in-person public hearing on this proposed rate increase so that all ratepayers have the ability to voice their concerns," end quote. Central Hudson is seeking a 16% increase in delivery rate for electricity and 19% for gas starting July 1st, 2024. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. In the Daily Freeman. Adam Pinal reports for Spectrum that the Asian Lunar New Year is now a public school holiday in New York. Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation on September 9th requiring all public schools to close for the Lunar New Year holiday. Hochul said, and I quote, By designating Lunar New Year as an official school holiday, we are taking an important step in recognizing the importance of New York's AAPI community and the rich diversity that makes New York so great. It is not just a day off from school, it is an opportunity for our children to learn about and celebrate their own different cultures and traditions. End quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, it will be partly sunny with the temperature high near 78 degrees. Tuesday night, a chance of showers. Then showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 62 degrees. And on Wednesday, showers and possibly a thunderstorm with a temperature high near 69 degrees. And on Wednesday night, a chance of showers mainly before 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 55 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I love what you say, Kaylin, how to strengthen oneself as a human being. You see people as people.
It's the way that I've used for years of phrasing it. I refuse to use the word addict towards a client. That's a very personal choice of mine. I don't feel it's my right or my position to place a label on any human being for anything. But even the phrase of somebody suffering from a substance abuse issue, I've been questioning recently, is that my place to say you're suffering from it? A lot of clients find very unique ways to hold themselves accountable and to incorporate the substance use or past use or recovery path as part of who they are and to, like we said, strengthen and better themselves for the better. So I've been really questioning myself, is it my place to tell everyone you're suffering from something? Maybe they see it as a path that they needed to go through in order to become the person who they are today or the person who they hope to become one day.
It's National Recovery Month. This is Marcia Lazarus, and I'm here with Dr. Kaylin Greene on Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Dr. Greene is Assistant Professor of Addiction Studies at SUNY Empire State College. When we met over 10 years ago, you were a student at the Sage Colleges studying forensic mental health, and you chose the Mental Health Association, Mahaney's, for your internship site, and that's when we got to work together. So when you reached out to me about a year ago, I learned that you have traveled far in your career, earning not only your master's degree, but also a PhD in criminal justice. What drew you to